From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Duncan in for Beth Ruyak. Rising rents and home prices are driving California residents to reconsider how the state regulates housing. Voters will decide on a controversial ballot measure this November that could give local governments more leeway in enacting rent control. The campaign to block that ballot measure is already underway. Joining us today to understand it all is political reporter Jeremy White. Jeremy, welcome back to Insight.
Hey, Beth. Good to be here.
So let's talk about the key players in this battle over rent control. Who are they?
Well, so far, the initiative to repeal Costa-Hawkins, which is the limit on how much cities can enact rent control, is a gentleman by the name of Michael Weinstein, who runs the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, provides healthcare services to people with AIDS. And he has been a player in California politics, an initiative politics for a while. You may recall that he funded some ballot initiatives to mandate the use of condoms and pornography and to restrict drug pricing a couple cycles ago, or I should say last cycle. Neither of those were successful. This time around, he's pouring a lot of money into this one. He has the backing of a lot of organized labor groups that have come out in favor of it. And then on the other side, you have the Apartment Association, sort of business interests, and then the State Building and Construction Trades Council, which is a major labor group representing, as the name suggests, people working in the construction industry.
So I'm sure by the fall, once the ads start airing nonstop, we are all going to know by its number the name of the measure, Proposition 10. So what does Prop 10 actually do?
In effect, it repeals the Costa-Hawkins Act, which limits how much cities can enact rent control, prohibiting it on single-family homes and condos, new apartments built after 1995. And for a lot of folks who see how expensive housing has gotten in California, there's a feeling that that law is outdated and that we need to give cities those tools back to prevent prices from rising too high.
So clearly there's going to be a lot of people split on this. Where do the landlords of real estate in the state stand, and are they rallying against this?
Yes. I think you're going to see the main opposition in terms of money coming from the California Apartment Association. They came out early on this one. And then I think you're also going to see real estate interests fighting this pretty hard. I noticed that a couple days ago, after one of these coalitions launched, almost immediately a developer down in Orange County dropped something like $3 million into the effort to fight this. So I think you're going to see a lot of money spent by sort of apartment and real estate interests to fight this one.
And when we break it down into parties, where do the state Democratic Party and Republican Party stand on this issue?
That's actually an interesting question that we are going to be watching this weekend. The California Democratic Party's executive board, so sort of the party insider leadership, are convening in Oakland. And among the things they're going to be doing is voting on whether to take a position on ballot initiatives. So there's a lot of lobbying going on around this one, and it'll be very interesting to see where the state party falls on this.
And how about organized labor?
Organized labor, for the most part, has lined up in favor of this. So you see SEIU, the California Teachers Association, AFSCME, a lot of the sort of big labor players have come out in favor of this. Again, though, you have the building trades who have a lot of members and a fair amount of political clout sort of lining up with the business and real estate interests and opposing this, embracing the argument that effectively passing this would suppress new construction, which I think the building trades see as bad for their members who want those jobs building houses.
And also possibly with building affected, then where do people live and how do people find places to rent if they stop building apartment houses?
Certainly, although I do think that an argument you are going to hear potentially from some of the labor folks in favor of this is that, you know, their working class members increasingly can't find affordable housing near where they work. I think there's an argument to be made on both sides there.
I'm talking with reporter Jeremy White. He used to cover the Capitol for the Sacramento Bee, and now he collaborates with Carla Marinucci on the California Playbook for Politico. So, Jeremy, before we get back to business, why don't you catch us up a little bit? What have you been up to since you last joined us on Insight?
So, those of you who have astonishingly good memories may remember last time I was on Insight, I was about to leave the Bee for an attempt to do some foreign reporting in Cambodia. So I did it. My girlfriend and I moved to Phnom Penh, and we lived there for about 6 months. And then we actually ended up heading back to California a little earlier than expected for various life reasons. And I'm thrilled now to be back on the California Politics Beat and back on Insight, which I should add, I still have my gigantic Insight mug from last time I came on, and I drink coffee out of it most mornings. So
well, we have a new one for you, so you'll have to trade it in.
I think I will.
Okay. So, okay, back to the business of politics in our world. San Francisco has a new mayor. London Breed was inaugurated as the 45th mayor of San Francisco. What's her message to the city so far?
You know, this was a race that was dominated by questions of housing and homelessness. I think anybody who's spent time in San Francisco will explain or will understand why those issues are sort of front and center. And so, you know, in her speech, she talked about dealing with those problems, and she also sort of directly addressed the gulf in San Francisco between the haves and the have-nots, which I think is something that for a city of great wealth, there's also a clear disparity between those who have it and those who don't. And she's talked a lot about doing something about that.
Any big-name Democrats in attendance?
You know, you had a lot of other local officials. So Libby Schaff was there, the mayor of Oakland, the mayors of San Jose and Sacramento, Sam Liccardo and Daryl Steinberg, several state assembly members. They were not there in person, but the senators Dianne Feinstein, Kamala Harris sent video messages, as did Barbara Lee and Jackie Speier. A reader notified us after we published our playbook item on this that Willie Mays was also in attendance. We neglected to mention one of the great outfielders of all time, but Willie Mays was also looking on from the audience.
So as we head into the weekend, going to be a hot one up here. You're down by the bay, but tell me about some stories you're looking at over the weekend as we head into next week.
You know, I think that our attention is focused this weekend on the California Democratic Party meeting, not just how they're going to vote on the ballot initiatives, which will be certainly pretty interesting, but there is an intra-Democratic fight for the U.S. Senate between Dianne Feinstein and former state Senate leader Kevin DeLeon. Kevin DeLeon and his surrogates have been working hard to get the party endorsement. You may recall that at the full California Democratic Party convention earlier, neither candidate got the endorsement, which was actually seen sort of as a coup for Senator DeLeon, and he got close. There's a 60% threshold, and he was above 50%, and so there's a renewed effort in his camp to get the endorsement this weekend. Feinstein has been sort of pushing people to vote no endorsement in the name of unity, so it'll be very interesting to see how that one works out. It was always going to be an uphill battle for Kevin DeLeon taking on Dianne Feinstein, who's well known to voters and has a lot of name recognition and credibility. And winning the endorsement of the state party would be a big development for him.
So I'm curious if you'd go back just for a minute to the time away from the United States. And it was Cambodia, correct?
Correct.
What was the highlight of being there? And you were there for approximately 6 months. And what made you decide to turn around and head back?
Well, my partner got offered a job back here in California that was a little too good to turn down, and so we kind of agonized over it and decided that you know, it was time, and we didn't want to sort of pass on that opportunity that came down. What was the first part of your question? The highlight?
Yeah, I'm just curious about what it was like to live there for 6 months. Many people have never been in that neck of the world. So, how did you find living in Cambodia?
You know, I never, it was a clarifying experience in making me realize some of the things that you would never appreciate until you don't have them, like, for example, sidewalks. But I would say the highlight was being able to travel around the region and see a lot of amazing places and try a lot of amazing food. I'm going to put in a plug here. Everybody knows that Vietnam is great. Malaysia, under-acknowledged gem.
That is Politico reporter Jeremy White for this week's Capital Chat. Jeremy, welcome home. Thanks for being on Insight.
Thanks for having me.
We have more on our website at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.